Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Psychovertical podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. I do apologize. It's always good to start with all your apologies. I said I was going to do a podcast every other day, and I didn't. So my daughter, who is my business manager, as in, anyway, I don't pay her, so she's just my business manager, as in she just tells me all the things I do wrong that make me not be a very good businessman, told me that I shouldn't promise things and not deliver them. But I spent my entire life doing that. So why stop now? So you think she, of all people, would realize that I'm just one of those kind of people. It's much easier. It's really, I think, like promising stuff and people getting really excited about them, but not delivering anything is better than people they're not saying anything to anybody and them not feeling excited about something they're not going to get. So I quite like that kind of approach. That was actually the reason I ended up climbing El Cap with my daughter when she was 13, because this thing had come about where we were going to go and climb El Cap together for a film, and then it didn't happen, and the film all like fell apart, as most films, as most TV shit does. And Ella was like, to be honest, Dad, I didn't think we were going to go because you're not very reliable. And that was it. It's like, right then, I'm going to climb El Cap, even if I have to kill you to prove that I am reliable. And we did. So, but the thing about kids, they never remember all the shit that went right. All they remember is all the stuff like the time you hit them with a ski pole, or, you know, lock them in a dungeon and all that kind of stuff. It's they're annoying that way. But anyway, I do apologize. So my kids, you know, my daughter's just about to finish doing a maths degree, where I was hoping she was going to go off and become a, you know, highly successful person living in, you know, living, working for Google or somebody. But this stupid virus is probably going to destroy her education and her life and everything else. And my son is like me, he's got no education anywhere. And his life's already ruined because he's my son. So the two of them are now sat at home, like trying to work out how they're going to survive the rest of their lives. So they've decided that they're going to basically annoy me and tell me how I have to become like some kind of YouTuber, or, you know, be successful. Like, it's like, Dad, your Instagram account is terrible. It's so messy. I'm like, how can it be messy? It's a load of photographs. Like, I just don't understand it. So anyway, so I'll probably be doing merch soon. I don't know what merch is, and I'm going to be doing all sorts of stuff. They're trying to persuade me apparently my YouTube channel is successful. I don't know why, but it's got about like 1,600 people go there. I don't know why. There's nothing on there, and But it's had like 100,000 views of videos on there. So there's quite a few videos of me talking like on stage, and some of them are good. Like the higher education one is, and people like all of them, but the higher education one is like a later one. So that's better. So people have been going there at YouTube watching me. So apparently now I've reached 100,000 views. I can monetize it or do something. I don't even know what monetizing is. It's like motorizing it. So I can suddenly, once your channel's monetized, if you like invest basically every hour of the day and just throw everything yourself into it, you can be making pounds. Literally, you can be making pounds. You get like 100,000, 400,000 views. You could be making like 40 quid or something. It's like, it's the way forward. So I basically, my son came to me, was like, "Dad, I want to take over your social media, and if you pay me like 50% of all the money you make, then I'll do it." And I'm like, 50% of fuck all, that sounds like a good deal. But because I am a businessman, I was like, okay, I'll give you 100%, I'll give you 100% of fucking nothing for like 6 months. And if you can make it into something, then you're welcome to it. So what I'm going to, hopefully he's going to bust his ass cheeks, sort of working his ass off with his sister to get me up into the teens where I'm making, like 15 quid a month or something. And then I'm just going to just come in after 6 months and say, right, you're all sacked. And I'm going to go to China and get like some sort of Chinese person to do it, or India, probably. India is probably the best place to get someone to do like that. On the subject of outsourcing, I'm very lucky. I'm one of those people where, if anybody here is an actor or knows anybody who's an actor, actors are always like, oh yeah, Tom Hanks. Yeah, I knew him. Yeah, I knew him when he was working at Blockbusters, and yeah, we both went for this part together. Big, it was called, and he got it, and I didn't get it. And I'm like, "What? Are you an actor?" Said they're always like, "Yeah, do you know I'm an actor?" Yeah, but why are you working like in this coffee shop? Anyway, so it's that kind of thing. But not only did I meet Jimmy Chin, I probably told this story before about meeting Jimmy Chin. If you know who Jimmy Chin is, then you don't know anything. So yeah, I met Jimmy Chin, and it was like 2001, and it was at a slideshow, and I was in a slideshow, he was in a slideshow. And mine was better. And I remember, like, I met him, like, "Oh, this is Jimmy Chin, and this is his assistant." I was like, "Fucking hell, how come you got an assistant? Like, who are you?" And so it just shows you, like, if you want to go far in life, you got to get an assistant. So that's why my children are now technically my assistants. They're like interns, basically. They're just like unpaid interns. They're actually making their own. They're making their own money out of working for me. Never work with your family. That's a good. I have worked with other people's families. It's not a good idea because they'll just like work their asses off. Never work with people from India. Like, never go and get a job in a corner shop. Work with an Indian family because they'll work their asses off. No one gets paid, and they'll think you're part of the family, and you won't get paid either. So that's a good tip in life. But what that was, I did have a point there though about meeting people early on. Oh God, I've forgotten already. I think I've got early onset dementia, or I'm eating too much sugar. It's like one or the other. Like I'm literally eating, like trying to kill myself by eating sugar, just eating lots of chocolate and biscuits, and like every day I got these like when I was away, I was doing really well. Like I got into like periodic fasting and all, or it's called, someone I'd be on Joe Rogan, periodic fasting. And then I was doing like, not eating, eating lots of fat and lots of protein and not eating many carbs. And I was like feeling really good. And then I came back from Oman and I was like looking like, people on Instagram were like, "Hey dude, your Instagram's so messy, but you're looking cool. You're looking fit and strong." I'm like, "Yeah, and then within like 2 weeks, I'm just like, just eating like just a whole cake. Anyway. But that's a good thing about it. If you get fat really quickly, you get thin really quickly. Do you know these people who were really, really skinny? Like if they did get fat, they would never lose it. So that's one thing. I'm still trying to rack my brains about who, what was the, I had a story about meeting someone. Stop this, rewind it, listen to what I was saying. I was talking about being an intern. I was talking about my daughter. I was talking about something else. That's something else. That's what I was about going to. It's filmmaking. No, I can't remember what I was talking about. Never mind. It was very funny. I'll come back to that later on at another time. I also remembered that in the last episode of this podcast, which was a higher education one, which is, if anybody doesn't know, I have like, generally one podcast is about like gear, people asking me stupid questions, and then this is me just talking about stupid things that are in my head that aren't questions. Although that was a question. Why? What was I thinking about? It was about meeting someone who was famous. It was basically about meeting Jimmy Chin, but it's also about meeting people before they're famous. Oh, fuck it, I don't care. So one problem with this. So my kids want me to become like this like YouTuber. Oh, I remember now. That's good. If you wait long enough, it comes back. Tim Ferriss. I remember meeting Tim Ferriss, who wrote like 4-hour work week or 4-hour whatever. And he's a really good example of one of these people where technically he might only do 4 hours work a week, but he is his business. So every moment of his life, he's working his ass off. So you always have to be really wary of people who tell you that they don't do anything or they don't work very much, like especially in social media, because just everything is work. Like he'd probably be up at, 4 o'clock in the morning. But I do remember Tim Ferriss telling me that the world is full of something, that the world is, some people are stupid, some people are lazy, some people are stupid and lazy. But if you're only one, you've got an advantage over the other, over other people. And if you're not stupid, you're not lazy, then everything's all right. So I'm basically fucked, basically. So one problem would be becoming like a social media butterfly and having my YouTube channel. And I'm just basically going to start, I'm just going to start ordering stuff and then opening it, like unboxing it, and also playing computer games based around climbing and just live streaming it. And you can all be like looking in and you'll just love it. It's going to be really good. I was thinking of doing just like watching pornography and wanking and just filming myself, because that seems like fair use of my time, really. But most people are probably doing that at home anyway, so it's no fun. So the problem with doing this like social media stuff, it takes fucking forever. Like, what time is it now? It's like, it's 2 o'clock. I got up this morning intending to make this stupid podcast, and I've just spent all day fanning on with like cables and things that didn't work and noises that are clicking and stuff. If this doesn't sound good, then I don't care. Like, I'm not putting more effort in. I've got like shit to do, and this is just like, it just takes up so much time to do this. And why? What's the, like, if you don't send me some money now, I'm going to kill myself, and then it's going to be on your conscience. So not now, but like sometime in the future, so take your time. You're giving me any money. So this morning I was in bed and I was trying to, and Vanessa, my wife, is trying to teach remotely. She's a teacher. She's trying to teach through Microsoft Teams, which I don't know anybody who's been involved with Microsoft Teams, but it's like insane. There's this meeting and you've got like 100 clueless teachers all trying to fucking work out what to do. And people are just, it's like, okay, Deirdre, like, if you go to the left of the screen, like press that button there. It's like, what's the button? It's like, oh my God. It's like, how are these people going to survive in this world where everything is done like remotely, So I came up with this conclusion. This is some real shit hot wisdom here, is basically we've been coming towards this time in the, for mankind in Western society, where there's those who are going to win and those who are going to lose, and the majority are going to lose, to do with like artificial intelligence and all this kind of stuff, basically. But I've realised where one of the sort of, is it demarcation, like one of the lines is here of who's going to lose and who's going to win. So basically, anyone who's ever rang tech support, they're all fucked, basically. And anyone who's just worked out for themselves, they're okay. No, they're okay. They're like a little bit better than the others. So they're just, the others have just had it, really. Basically, your mum and dad and everybody else. Apologise, as a helicopter land. For some reason, whenever I start doing this podcast, a helicopter starts flying around my house. So I don't know why that is. Anyway, I can admit, you know, anyway, it's very, anyway. So, this podcast is following on from the, oh no, so back again. So one last ramble. So in order to keep my kids happy, I am going to start doing these podcasts on video. I need to have a shave first and put my clothes on. I'm gonna do that, but it's just too complicated at the moment because I don't have the proper sound things and everything else. And so, but anyway, they are going to be on there because there's things where I have to actually physically draw a picture or tie a knot or something to for things to make sense. So I am going to do that, but in the meantime, I am going to start doing little videos that go on my Instagram, which is so messy, and Facebook stories and all that kind of crap. So. If you don't follow me on all that stuff, Instagram and all that kind of stuff, then go and follow me and all that kind of stuff like that. So, but following on from the podcast number, whatever it was, called The Sea, where I read something from the Sea of Dreams story I'd wrote in my book. It was actually a blog post, and it's in the book Unknown Pleasures by Vertebra Graphics. And I'm going to read another bit of writing. the first thing I read, if you remember The Sea of Dreams, it was like a classic piece of kind of non-linear, but it kind of is linear, where you begin. You know, you begin at the very end of the story, you know, at the very end of the event you're writing about, which in this case was climbing, soloing El Capitan. And then you return and you go through the sort of more like linear narrative of climbing the wall, you know, but background of why you were climbing the wall, you know, memories. And then it just ends up, comes back into the end of the story. So the first few paragraphs, you could just probably cut them out and paste them in just before the last paragraph, and then it would be like totally linear, and it would all more make sense. So this is like a very common way of writing. So it's like maybe it's just like one step up from, you know, like a completely linear storyline. And probably if you the better you are at writing, the better you are of just writing a linear story. You don't need to do all these jump cuts and all that kind of stuff. So probably, like, I didn't really have any, like I said in the last podcast about writing, I didn't have any formal education about writing, don't really understand anything about writing. So all my understanding of storytelling and everything else just comes from reading comics, watching TV and watching films. So, you know, like, you know, film like, you know, a film like Pulp Fiction or those kind of things, you know, they're like classic, you know, you just cut it all up and you know, it's that kind of thing. So, I'm really tired. I'm living in Galway at the moment with my relations. I'm actually, if anybody's ever seen the film The Guard with Brendan Gleeson in, like, I'm about 2 miles away from where they have the big fight at the end with the drug dealers, like on the pier. So it's kind of a cool place to be. But my father-in-law, he's been trying to cure cancer. He's trying to come up with a cure for cancer, like literally, but doing it is basically working through the human genome by hand with a pen and pencil and a billion sheets of paper, which is a craziness. I can't tell if he's actually totally insane or completely knows what he's talking about, but it's the most craziest thing ever. And basically he wakes up about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and he goes to bed about 2 or 3 o'clock at night, and he's just working on this thing, and he's been doing it ever since I've known him. And so anyway, so he keeps waking me up because he's like shuffling around at night like Howard Hughes. So if I yawn, I do apologize. Now I said I've yawned, I feel like yawning a bit more now. It's a bit like, oh God, when you have to wear one of these like stupid masks on your face, you feel like you're going to start sneezing all the time. It's that kind of thing. So I've got a high tech. I've got a piece of paper here as well, it makes it easy for me to read. So I'm going to read another short little piece of writing, and this is called a piece of wood. So this is what I would. This is more the last thing I wrote is more conventional. Now this is less conventional. Like this is probably this bit of writing. It's probably more in line with how my brain works rather than the other one, in that it's like all over the place. I don't know what the hell's going on. So I shall read it to you. It's only how many pages is it long? It's only like 1, 2, 3. It's like 3 and a quarter pages long. So it's not super long. So I shall read it. I like writing. I like short things. So anyway, so here we go. There is a block of wood at the end of my bed, 4 inches square, an inch thick, wrapped in the rubber of a car in a tube. This piece of wood keeps my bed up. There is a hole drilled through one corner and threaded with a loop of faded red 4mm cord. A long steel screw twisted through its centre, through and into my bed's cheap laminated end board, and on into the central beam, which holds rib-like slats in check. This piece of wood at the end of my bed is special, and without it, my bed would collapse. Without this piece of wood, everything would fall apart. What makes this piece of wood special is that it fell from the sky and landed at my feet. I would like you to imagine that my bed collapsed through frantic lovemaking, that I rolled and crashed with wild abandon on undermanned slats, my bed shortchanged by some Swedish accountant attempting to hit the right profit margin for his budget beds. But it didn't. Most nights I sleep alone, my bed unmade, a bed no self-respecting woman would venture near, to be fair. Corners untucked, pillow slips missing, poppers undone. It's not what a bed should be. It's a bivy most nights, unless my woman calls. Then out comes the best silver, corners tucked in, all four, hers and mine, pillow slips found, poppers done up. Most of the time, my bed is just somewhere to sleep, not to belong, a doorway, a ledge, a patch of ground, where the stones are small enough not to bite through your mat. It is a teenager's bed for a grown-up, one that is crawled into when you know you should have gone to bed an hour earlier, not run to with excitement long before it's time to sleep. In this bed, there is no fun to be had, nor is it a place to linger. It is the place I kill dead the day. It would be funny, in a BBC sitcom sort of way, to lead you to believe that my Rorke's axe pushed his bed beyond its safe working load, only to admit later it was the jumping of my children that caused its demise. A bit of canned laughter to trick your mind into thinking that you're laughing as well. And yet my kids, although young, are old enough to recognise that cheap modern beds made from ground down trees are not for jumping on. Old metal beds are best for this. Beds that built an empire, that saved thousands in the Blitz as the roofs came down. The bed of a life should have a metal frame, metal springs, a net of metal intricately twisted into shape by massive metal machines long since dead or shipped off to China. When I was a kid, I loved to sleep under my bed. It was exciting. Beneath such a twisted steel tapestry, there was a feeling of safety, from bombs that could bring down the walls or reality that could tear down a life. Perhaps I'm not too old to do it again, although back then houses seemed much less full, and under the bed was not a place for wheeled storage boxes and stuff. Back then, under the bed was a magical place, a cut-price Narnia for poor kids, where you could shuffle in and fall asleep and bang your head when you woke in the night. How many great minds found their calling looking up at the twisting of springs, questioning how each long length of steel was bent and formed into this, into the other like that, the ends sharp against their fingers and palms as they tried to grasp it all. Under a bed, you're safe. Under a bed, you're hidden. Sometimes I'd like to crawl under my bed, but I never would. I know I'd only have to crawl back out. Plus, there's no room for me now. So this piece of wood, where did it come from? I was walking along the bottom of El Cap 2 years ago, close to the start of the Muir Wall, when I heard a dull knocking from above. The sound was not sharp and terrifying like a falling rock, a sound that my brain would react with the same speed as I would the rattle of a rattlesnake at my toes, but rather something less threatening and more intriguing. As I looked up, I saw something falling, bouncing down the wall, something that had landed almost at my feet. A block of wood, 4 inches square, an inch thick, wrapped in a carton tube, drilled and threaded through one corner with a loop of faded red 4mm cord. It could only have come from a root like the Salathea, or maybe Excalibur, a root with some monster cracks designed to be stacked against a large cam, the rubber glued to the rock, in the hope that it would help the wood stick to the granite. In the hope. I looked up and couldn't see anything, nor telltale signs of a team, or the shouts of panic as the clumsy climber realised they were stuffed, would have to go home. The wall seemed empty. I picked up the piece of wood and thought about just chucking it into the trees. Yet another piece of big wall flotsam. After all, who needed a piece of wood covered in rubber with a tie-off threaded through it? I stood there wondering about this story. Who had made it? I imagined them going down to the lumber yard and buying the wood, or more likely, pinching the wood from a skip. But then I couldn't even remember seeing a skip in California. So I went back to a further image. The climber sawing the wood, finding the inner tube and gluing it, drilling the hole, bringing it here, laying it out with their rack in Camp 4, hauling it up the wall, leading the pitch with it clipped to their harness, unsure if it would work, dropping it, and so making all that faff a waste of time. And now it was in my hands. Our paths had crossed. It must have come for me for a reason, so I decided to keep it. So why did my bed fall apart? I'm not sure. Maybe it's due to me having rhythmic movement disorder, look it up, which means that since I was a baby, I roll my head backwards and forwards when I'm asleep. I used to worry my mum no end. I would worry if my kids did it too. But I guess it's a bit like being possessed by an evil spirit. Sooner or later, you either get used to it or the spirit goes away. I didn't do it that much these days, but it's so ingrained in me that when I do, I don't even know it, and I seem only to do it when I sleep by myself or with my evil spirit. When I'm going to start doing it, as it tends to happen when I've completed my migration from one side of the bed to the other. When you've shared a bed for a long time with time, you instinctively stay on your side, even when you're on your own. But when the other side remains empty, your instinct slowly fades, and millimetre by millimetre, night by night, you creep onto the other side. Maybe your body is always on the lookout for a bit of Lebensraum. Perhaps it's the bed that moves beneath you. Perhaps you're just looking for some love and only finding the other side of an empty bed. All I know is by the time I've traversed my bed from left to right, my head starts rolling. Anyway, back to the wood and the bed. So somehow my bed was broken. Too much shaking of a known sexual kind, probably causing the two small screws that held the one central large beam to fail. It looked like a new bed was in order, but the next cheapest option beyond just sleeping on a mattress, and seeing as these days a bed is simply a warehouse for all your crap underneath it, why not just balance the mattress on top of all the crap underneath? Was to attempt a repair, to screw a piece of wood to the end of the bedboard so I could hold up the central bed support. The only problem was what to repair it with. Like some Grecian tale of heavenly meddling in the DIY affairs of man, I realised that the piece of wood I'd found below El Cap must have been given to me for a higher purpose, to mend my bed. Digging through my box of climbing junk, I fished it out, and 5 minutes later, I was once again the owner of a fully working bed. Like I said, I don't really like my bed. Some days are for living, some days are for remembering, some days are for getting over with, and I see my bed as a switch. Climb in, and the day ends. And when you go to sleep, hoping the new one will leave you in a better shape than the last. But as I switch off the light, the last thing I see is a piece of wood, 4 inches square, an inch thick, wrapped in car inner tube, drilled and threaded in one corner with a loop of faded red 4mm cord. And it reminds me of the wonder and randomness of life, that a tree could grow and be cut down, and a climber could cut himself a piece of timber from that tree on the other side of the world, not knowing that one day it would hold up my empty bed and have a story written about it. There you go. I'd say that was like a more advanced bit of writing. I do apologise for my poor reading skills. Like I said before, like some things are good for reading and some things are good for reading out loud. Like some things sound amazing when you read them, and when you read them out loud, they sound crap. But that doesn't sound too bad. But you know, so really, it's just a story about finding a piece of wood, and a bed. But it's also leaves a lot of questions. Like there's things about rolling your head. There's a lot of kind of unknowns in this story. Like it's not setting out to tell you everything. I think really it's a story about loneliness. I always think that's what it's about. But I think at the time it was just a story about a piece of wood. It was literally a story about a piece of wood. And I guess it's a good thing to think about is often people, when they want to write stories about climbing or adventures or the stuff that happens in their lives, they often focus too much on the big things, and they often miss all the little tiny things. And it's the little tiny things that help in part, not necessarily truth, but imparts some further questions. Like it's much better to ask the reader to think of their own answer rather than tell them an answer. Let them try and work out why you're in this bed by yourself. There's a bit about that you're in a relationship with somebody. It's like why you're in a bed by yourself. It hasn't got very many certainties in here. It's not, you know, there's no description of where this bedroom is, where you are, but nevertheless, the reader like fills all that stuff in. They're imagining a bed. They're imagining a. The one problem with it is I was probably too specific about how the bed was mended, because you don't want, I'm filling in too many details there. Basically, the bed had like a central, so it was a cheap IKEA bed, had like a central piece of wood, and it broke. So I had to like, anyway. What's funny is that a few years later, I end up leaving this house where this bed was, and I kind of ended up kind of being a little bit destitute and a bit homeless. And the only thing I really wanted from that house was actually the piece of wood, which is because I felt like we had a, because I kind of knew if I just left the piece of wood there that someone would probably just throw the bed away, because they're like, why is a piece of wood screwed on the end of this bed? They wouldn't appreciate like what it really meant to somebody, this piece of wood. So yes, you know, so that's kind of, that's yeah, yes, often maybe the things that have absolutely no value to anybody can have a lot of value to other people. Like I know there's a bit in Psychovertical where I talk about being like really strung out and getting to a B layer, just sitting there being really, really exhausted, and how I found this like a business card like sticking out the crack, and I pulled it out and it was like Lance Milo Eagle rock and roll blues jazz banjo lessons given or something. And it was really it's just a thing. But then ever since then, like every now and again, someone has like sent me like a flyer for like Lance Milo Eagle, who must live in California somewhere. And so I have this connection with like Lance Milo Eagle, and I've had it, it's like, you know, I describe it in the book. I've got like a photograph of it when I do my, if I ever do a slideshow about doing that kind of thing. And you have this connection with this person in the world, but he has no idea who I am. He has no idea this story probably exists, or that, or maybe he does, I don't know. But yeah, so the connection between objects and other people. So the person who built this piece of wood, you know, he has no idea that this story was written about a piece of wood that he had on this climb. So yeah, so I don't know. But in this linear style, so basically it has real no, has it just, it's just a story. I don't think it has any real linear sort of non-linear storytelling. It's got most of it's taking place in my head. Like if it was a film, we could just have a voiceover over an image of the bed. Maybe you'd have like a scene where you see me walking underneath El Capitan and this stone falls down. Maybe you'd have like a scene where there's me as a child, like rolling my head and my mum sort of being concerned, standing over me or something. You might have a scene of my kids, some like, not my kids, but some kids jumping on a bed that's not actually real. You might have a scene of the bombs dropping and onto a, with people underneath the metal bed. I don't know. But yeah, so metal beds, highly recommend metal beds. You don't seem to see so many these days. I had a friend, I remember when I was a kid, seeing someone who like whacked their head open on a metal bed, like cut their head open trying to jump between two beds. So it's always put me off metal beds. So anyway, so yeah, well, maybe next time I'll read something that is more complicated. Like the structure, when you write things, it is very important. It's important to have, like, you can make things that are really, really complicated. They look really, really complicated, but in fact, they're actually really, 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 really simple. Like, so often when you're on stage, you've got this thing where you begin telling one story, and then before you finish it, you go into like another story, and then before you finish it, you go to another story, and then slowly you like roll them all back and you close them all up one after the other to the end. And people are like, oh God, that's like, how do you do that? How do you remember where they all are? It was actually like really, 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 really simple. Like, it's harder on a podcast when I'm losing my train of thought because nothing's written down. I'm just going by what's in my head. But in writing, it's quite interesting to play around. But the main thing is that you can't lose the reader. You don't want the reader to be like, I don't really understand. But if they're intrigued by what you read, if you're intrigued by this the unknown, then they'll keep on going. It's like an adventure. Like, why is this? Why is there a whole like bit in this book about a piece of wood on the end of a bed? And hopefully, when they get to the end, like for me, the payoff is the idea that is that last line that a tree could grow and be cut down, and a climber could cut himself a piece of timber from that tree on the other side of the world, knowing that one day it would hold up an empty bed and have a story written about it. So basically the whole story is that there's a story about a piece of wood. That's what the story is about. So, so never be afraid to write about the little tiny things. In fact, that's what you should really do, is write about little things, not about the big things. And I shall think I shall call that a day. I shall go. So anyway, so I won't promise you when I'm going to do any more podcasts, but my daughter tells me I have to do one. I have to do one more, you know, every whenever. So keep an eye out. And please, for my children's behalf, please follow, like, share, flagellate, whatever you can do, whatever else tells you to do, just do that. And so anyway, until next time.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.